It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. San Bernardino, Paris, and Portland have been the sites of tragic shootings this year. Sadly, these events seem to be happening with more frequency. Monday will mark the third anniversary of the Newtown, Connecticut school shootings. Joining us to address coping mechanisms in the aftermath of these events is Brett Robbins. He is an associate professor of psychology and chair of the Department of Humanities and Human Sciences at Point Park University. Brett Robbins, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul. It's wonderful to be back on your show. Thanks for having me.
You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, that's ESSPGH. Do you find yourself struggling to cope with tragic, violent events? What are the problems you and others you know need help with? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Brett Robbins, what is your reaction when you see these mass shootings take place?
Well, you know, one of the first things that I get really concerned about is the way that people can sometimes begin to make overgeneralizations about certain groups of people as a way of trying to make sense of the tragedy. In particular, the way people of religious and ethnic minority groups and also people with mental health can sometimes get implicated in ways that I think can be problematic. I think that also that that's in a way an attempt to cope with the complexity of the issues that are going on. And I think it's also to some extent maybe a result of some of the polarization that happens as people respond to the tragedy.
Okay, so you're saying a couple of interesting things. One is that people want maybe a simple answer, and that the way of one coping mechanism is demonizing a group of people.
Yes, yeah, that's exactly what I mean. And I think that in the case of the recent shooting that happened in San Bernardino, you have a couple who are Muslim in terms of the religious faith, but they're a particular extreme form and they're quite different than, most more moderate Muslim groups who are nonviolent. But I think for people who don't know better, it's easy to make that generalization, and you can get discrimination against people who are Muslim faith, for example. Or in cases like in Newtown at Sandy Hook or in other cases of mass shootings, you might get a lot of discussion around the mental health issues of that particular shooter. And so sometimes I think people will sort of overgeneralize, and it can increase the stigma associated with people with mental health problems.
Outside of media coverage, is there anything else that you see wrong with how we as a society respond to these shooting events?
Yeah, I mean, I think you really nailed it when you used the term over. You sort of looking for a simple solution.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes people have knee jerk responses, and generally there are two types of coping responses. Generally speaking, people engage in problem focused coping on the one hand, or emotion focused coping, and I think people who are more problem focused in their coping want to find a solution and want to do something and take some kind of action. And people who are more emotion-focused work more on managing their emotions. And sometimes situations call for problem-focused coping, and sometimes they call for emotion-focused coping. But in cases where there's not much that people can do, and I think in many cases these kinds of tragedies, there's not much that people can do to sort of protect themselves or to stop these kind of things. In some cases, managing through emotion-focused coping is the most appropriate thing to do. But I think some people don't know how to do that. I think men in particular have difficulty with that, and we're more sort of action-oriented, and we want to go out and do something. And I think that in some cases, it's important, particularly right in the aftermath of a tragedy like this, to sort of step back and not necessarily to have a knee-jerk reaction, because often
that's hard to do, though, isn't it?
It is very hard to do. I think it's almost counterintuitive. It really is counterintuitive to step back and go into more of a reflective mode, manage our anxiety, calm down collectively, as a culturally and as a society, and really think through the issues in a much more rational way. I think if we take knee-jerk responses And you can see, you know, politically, there's a lot of opportunism whenever these kind of tragedies happen, both on the left and the right. And I think that sometimes you can get policy that might get passed as a knee-jerk response to these kinds of tragedies that end up being something we regret, you know, 5 or 10 years down the road.
So, can you give me an example?
Well, I think maybe getting involved in the Iraq war as a response to 9/11 might be a good example of that. You know, I think it was...
There was such a desire. Well, I mean, I think a lot of people would agree with you. You're saying that there was such a desire to do something,
right?
Anything. And of course, the Afghanistan war came before Iraq,
mm-hmm.
but Iraq was part of the reaction to 9/11. And you're saying that if people had been in a more reflective mood about taking time to consider their actions and the actions of the country, that we may not have had, as you describe it, a knee-jerk reaction.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, the fact that we never really had evidence of weapons of mass destruction wasn't so bothersome to people when people had this need to sort of do something to try to prevent, you know, what a horrible tragedy that was on back in 2001. And so, and also the other thing is the erosion of our civil liberties, right? I mean, I think that there's, I mean, I think it's well known now that, you know, we've given up a lot of our civil liberties in response to 9/11 and other similar kinds of tragedies. And I think that, you know, we really need to think hard about that. You know, do we want to allow our policymaking to be driven by irrational emotions like fear? Or do we want to sort of balance civil rights with, you know, protecting ourselves?
Are you saying there's a particular danger of that happening now, much like the months immediately after 9/11, because of the shooting in Paris, which was less than a month ago, the shooting in Colorado, the shootings in San Bernardino, at least two of these events have been linked to ISIS. In Paris, that's certainly been confirmed. It seems as though they're still kind of sifting through the evidence in San Bernardino, but that we're in a similar state where, as you say, we could make a rush to judgment or react in an emotional, visceral way to something that might be different if we were to take time to consider how we really feel about this.
Exactly, Paul. I think that there's a real danger when we're right in the aftermath of these kind of tragedies to engage in sort of knee-jerk reactions and maybe push through policies politically that are something we will likely regret down the road. I think you can really see that in the political campaigning. You know, for example, some of the statements you hear from Donald Trump, I think, has really been exploiting the sort of fears that people have about immigrants and about Muslims. And I think that's pretty distasteful. But I also, I think you can see it on the left side too, with maybe immediately jumping to gun control solutions, which, you know, I personally think are a good idea. But I think that, again, it's a situation of how do we balance our civil liberties with protecting ourselves. And I think when we're in acute crisis right after an event like this, I think there's a danger of the public, out of fear, giving too much over in terms of their civil liberties. I think the spot you just had on with Congressman Tim Murphy, with all due respect to Congressman Murphy and all of his clinical experience that I greatly respect, I have some concerns that his Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act is one of those potentially dangerous decisions we could make in the aftermath of some of these shootings.
And why would that be?
Well, the Crisis Act makes it easier for a judge to mandate mental health treatment. And so what that means is there's a lower threshold for coercing people to get mental health treatment if they don't want it. And in many cases, people who aren't really a danger and simply don't want to be treated may be forced to have treatment when they don't even need it.
Is part of a knee-jerk reaction, as you say, the idea that you might be demonizing people in society who have mental health issues and saying that they are more a part of the problem, and that's what needs to be dealt with.
Right, right. So I'm concerned that it's a similar kind of knee-jerk reaction where we have a particular person who maybe has some mental health issues, thinking of Newtown in particular, who does this heinous act. And it becomes very easy, I think, to exploit that in a way to push through legislation that, you know, might be something we regret after, you know, sort of the emotions die down and we're thinking more rationally about what's actually happening.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Brent Robbins. And again, he is an associate professor and psychology chair at Point Park University. The number to call to join the conversation in the few minutes we have remaining, 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Do you think that we are in some ways becoming anesthetized to these shooting events?
Well, I think in a certain way we are being anesthetized, and in a certain way we're not. I think that we're being anesthetized in the sense that these kind of knee-jerk reactions and the polarization, I think, that we were talking about earlier are a kind of form of, strangely, of anesthetizing. It's because what I think people need to do is to, again, slow down, get in touch with their anxiety, be aware of that, be more mindful of what they're feeling and what they're thinking, and be more critical. And I think that when people are engaged in these more sort of defensive, compensatory kind of reactions, you know, like let's go immediately take action to try to solve this when we haven't even really thought through the problem, I think is a kind of anesthetizing, paradoxically.
But then someone might say, well, when is the appropriate time? You know, a month, a day? Is there a length of time to this, to dealing with this properly, in your view?
Mm-hmm.
Or what?
Yeah, I mean, I think that time is something that is part of the solution, but I don't think it's the full solution. I think part of it is slowing down, being reflective, being self-critical, being aware of our emotional reactions, being more aware of the way anxiety and fear can lead to certain kinds of distortions in our thinking and our perception and our judgment when we go to make actions. You know, like the availability heuristic has been studied quite a bit. You know, when there's a mass shooting, it's on the news for, you know, like a month in some cases, and, you know, people are processing it very highly. So it's similar to like a shark attack phenomenon, where there's very rarely are there shark attacks, but when it happens, it tends to get a lot of media exposure. But, you know, people don't realize that you're actually much more likely to get hit by a stray airplane part than you are to get bitten by a shark, and probably even less likely to get shot by a mass shooter than you are bitten by a shark.
But people see what's going on, and they don't necessarily feel that way. And David on Twitter asks, in addition to fear of terror, are we also afraid of the seemingly unsolvable complexity of Mideast turmoil? So the idea that this problem is so deeply rooted and so complex that we're never going to solve it.
Right. I mean, I think that, I mean, the Middle East is, you know, no question.
And that's
question.
Where this is coming from.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, the San Bernardino incident is related to that. And
yeah.
Paris obviously is.
Right. Yeah, I mean, what's happening in the Middle East is very enigmatic and it's complex. And I think that's one of the reasons why we have to be careful about making knee-jerk reactions. But I think that, you know, you can't wait forever to take actions to try to resolve these issues. But I think that there's a sort of level of discourse. There's a certain level of discourse that's really about, hey, let's not immediately move in the direction of scapegoating or demonizing certain groups of people. You know, even I think I give some credit to George Bush. You know, even after 9/11, I remember him saying not to take it out on American Muslims. I think that was a very responsible thing for a president to do. I think that we have to call terrorism when it's terrorism. But then again, there are some situations where, you know, if you listen to someone like a Noam Chomsky, he would argue that, you know, the United States is sometimes engaged in what might be perceived as terrorism by people who are being targeted by, say, certain drone strikes in certain areas mm-hmm. of the world.
Sure.
So maybe terrorism sometimes is a matter of perspective. Maybe sometimes the way we're reacting in response to these kind of tragedies aren't really solving the problem, but aggravating the problem by creating more fear in those who are being targeted. I think that if people who are Muslim, for example, or people who are dealing with mental health issues are feeling more stigmatized, I think we're going to see more of this kind of thing rather than less of it.
Is there an added dimension with shootings taking place close to the holidays? You know, San Bernardino was just last week, so we were already into December when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Newtown, the anniversary of that, the third anniversary, is Monday, so we were just, you know, a couple weeks from Christmas when that happened, or 10 days from Christmas when that happened. Does that make it worse?
Oh, I think that there's no question we see an increase in suicidality and homicidality around holiday seasons. And there's a number of different theories for that, but my favorite one is that, you know, a lot of people who are suffering because of, you know, family dysfunction and loneliness and isolation, and all of those emotions are really acute during the holiday.
How does someone cope? We've got just a few seconds left, but how does someone cope other than going to a professional for help? What should you do?
I think the best thing you can do is meditate, find meaning and purpose, stop, reflect, don't always immediately act. And then when you think through the correct action, go ahead and take it with confidence.
Brent Robbins is the associate professor and psychology chair at the Department of Humanities and Human Sciences at Point Park University. Brent, as always, great thanks.
Thanks so much, Paul.
Thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh. We were not able to have enough time at the end to visit with our UFO investigators from Kecksburg, but we will talk to them tomorrow. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.